Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's not just Friday, it's follow-up Friday, where we dig a little deeper on things that have come up earlier in the week. And we begin this week's follow-ups with more thoughts on Barack Obama's speech on race and politics, as many Americans are still figuring out what they think about him in relation to the fiery clips of his pastor, Jeremiah Wright, and the speech itself. In a minute, we'll ask two leading African-American pastors here in New York if they would use the language or tone of Reverend Wright. But first, a clip from the archives. Would you be shocked to learn that Martin Luther King, speaking from the pulpit, called the United States government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world? Well, here is Dr. King from the famous speech he gave at Riverside Church in Manhattan when he explained his reasons for denouncing the war in Vietnam. It was April 4th, 1967. He refers to a question that he was getting asked by armed black men in America's ghettos.
They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, to bring about the changes it wanted. Their questions hit home, and I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government, for the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence. I cannot be silent.
Martin Luther King in New York, April 4th, 1967. With me now, the leaders of two of the biggest churches in New York, Reverend Floyd Flake, senior pastor of the Allen African Methodist Episcopal Church, and Reverend A.R. Bernard, founder and CEO of the Christian Cultural Center, both in Queens. Reverend Flake, Reverend Bernard, welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning, and thanks for coming on with us on Good Friday.
Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be with you and my dear colleague and friend, Reverend Flake.
And let me ask directly, right up front, what each of you was really thinking when you heard those clips of Jeremiah Wright, "Goddamn America," and "We bombed Hiroshima and never batted an eye," and "The U.S. gave drugs to African Americans and created the AIDS virus." Did it make you cringe, Reverend Bernard? Did you say, you tell him, Brother Wright, or exactly what?
You know, and I'm glad that this discussion has been brought to the table, because in the African-American community, we don't react to that the way the white community would. Mm. I understand immediately the implications that that language would have on Barack Obama's campaign, but it was not strange, because we're used to the shock rhetoric, which was critical to the civil rights movement, and was a form of communication from the black pastor who saw himself as a prophet, quite similar to the biblical prophet, who would call Israel a city of Jerusalem, a city of murderers, and the judgment of God will be upon you. So that is the context in which it was understood. Whether it has the same value today in this very, very changed American society, I would say no.
By the way, I know some people who are members of your church in Queens, but I think, to be accurate, your church is actually located in Brooklyn,
Reverend
right?
Flake, Reverend Flake has the Queens territory, and I have Brooklyn.
Right, okay.
<I'll> be,
so my colleagues crossed the border to go to the Christian Cultural Center. Well, Reverend Flake, same question.
Yeah, the impact for me was not as great as I think Reverend Bernard has it properly stated, because in the African-American community, this whole notion of prophet and priest really is a practice, and to take a 30-second snippet for me would not ever be a basis by which I would make a judgment on an entire sermon, which probably went 40, 45 minutes or more. So I think the white reaction to it is quite different, because they don't really understand what we would call liberation theology language, when I was in college and seminary, we were taught from James Cone and Gayroyd Wilmore and others who were really exponents of the kind of language. Language, though, does not necessarily define who that person is, which is the reason Barack Obama could not disassociate himself, because the other side of that prophetic word is his priestly responsibilities, where he has baptized the babies and performed the weddings and done other things for the community.
Would you ever put it that way, Reverend Flake? I mean, there are enough of these.
No, my language is quite different. It's a little bit different. I think Pastor Bernard is a little bit different. But I think we would probably say it in a different way. And, of course, several of his points I would not have agreed with at all.
Let me confirm that. We represent, I believe my colleague would agree, a new paradigm of black pastors and black leadership. Jeremiah Wright comes from a particular age. Things have changed, and the black pulpit and pastorate has become quite sophisticated and more sensitive to what's going on in the society in a different way. I believe that Obama did the right thing. He disassociated himself from the words of discontent spoken by Pastor Jeremiah Wright, but not from the reality that Pastor Jeremiah Wright represents from the black community.
Right, and we're going to play a clip of Obama from the speech to that point in just a minute. But the question that I think, or a question that I think a lot of white Americans are wondering, and I'll, you know, just ask you directly again, do a lot of African Americans on Sunday mornings hear language like that in a lot of churches? Around, you know, if people are framing this in terms of, well, that's a generation, and this reflects a widespread anger, is that kind of preaching common in black churches around the country, do you think, Reverend Bernard?
I don't think so. Again, there is a new leadership, a changing of the guards, who see that the landscape has changed, and the need for this type of shock rhetoric does not fall into the place of the Sunday pulpit anymore. So we're thinking differently. We are involved, integrated, and engaging the culture, such as my dear colleague Reverend Flake has been able to successfully do. So I think it's a different paradigm of the prophetic being demonstrated by the new leadership. Is there still that kind of preaching going on in the black church? Yes, but it doesn't represent the current paradigm.
And represents probably such a small percentage. I can't imagine. I travel, as well as Pastor Bernard, we travel all over the country. We're in mega churches, we're in middle churches and all churches. That is not really a consistent language. I think one has to know Pastor Jeremiah Wright in the historicity of his involvement from the civil rights era. I think you have a few of those guys left, Jeremiah being one of them, but he has just retired also. You really don't have that many people left from that era who are of that ilk. And I think Pastor Bernard and I preach messages of empowerment. It is not, we may identify the problem, but we're also trying to get people to understand that they are part of the solution.
And as we open up the phones on this follow-up Friday segment, we want to specifically invite church-going African-Americans. Do you hear things like Reverend Wright was saying when you go to church here on Good Friday? What's the Christian as well as the racial and political and cultural context to understand Reverend Wright, in your opinion? And someone as mainstream and reconciliation-oriented as Barack Obama joining Wright's flock and finding religious resonance there. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Are other churches that you go doing the same thing? Are your pastors using the same tone? Do you hear similar language when you go to church? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let me replay a central clip of Senator Obama's speech from the other day and follow up by asking our two reverend guests about it.
For the men and women of Reverend Wright's generation, the memories of humiliation and doubt and fear have not gone away, nor is the anger and the bitterness of those years. That anger may not get expressed in public, in front of white coworkers or white friends, but it does find voice in the barbershop or the beauty shop, around the kitchen table, At times, that anger is exploited by politicians to gin up votes along racial lines or to make up for a politician's own failings. And occasionally, it finds voice in the church on Sunday morning, in the pulpit, and in the pews. The fact that so many people are surprised to hear that anger in some of Reverend Wright's sermons simply reminds us of the old truism that the most segregated hour of American life occurs on Sunday morning.
The most segregated hour of life in American life occurs on Sunday morning, said Barack Obama in his speech. And we're talking about these issues that have been raised with Reverend A.R. Bernard, founder and CEO of the Christian Cultural Center in Brooklyn, which has like 21,000 members, right?
Well, we did it one time. We're at 29,000 right
Whoa.
Now.
Whoa, okay. I'm behind. That is a mega church. And Reverend Floyd Flake, senior pastor of the Allen African Methodist Episcopal Church in Queens. And Reverend Bernard, let me ask you to reflect on what Senator Obama said at the end of that clip. And talking about the anger. Well, first of all, the most segregated hour in American life occurring on Sunday morning. How much racial diversity is there in your congregation of so many people?
Well, we're quite diverse, and I think it's important that white America understand that we've moved beyond the profile of the black community that was established back in 1965 that painted a picture of us as quite monolithic. That is not true. Our congregation is very, very diverse. It is a diversity of people of color. We have white people in our congregation. But we have Asian, we have African from Nigeria, from South Africa, from Ghana, from Uganda. We have Colombians, we have people from Central America, South America. I mean, it's quite a diverse body of people.
And Reverend Flake, what about at the Allen AME?
Well, you will find a great deal of diversity here, but generally churches reflect the community of which they are a part. And as you know, I had this congressional district with over 500,000 people here. So the reality is the community is predominantly African-American, West Indian, African. So that's the predominant population. But there are also Latinos here. There's some Japanese. And I do have some white members. So that, again, it is reflective of what the community is. And to the point of this segregated hour, I am not sure that emerged within the black community. That language has been around probably the last 25, 30 years, and I can't remember who wrote the book that did the analysis, but that language has been around. And in so many instances, when you look at community differentials, I think that language really does have some weight.
So when Reverend Obama talks about the anger and the bitterness that remains, as I think, not just a general, not just a generational thing, in portions of the African American community. How do you reflect that differently from Jeremiah Wright, from the pulpit, if you feel that's your job, Reverend Flake?
Well, I reflect it totally differently because that would certainly not be consistent with my language. My language is about empowering people to take responsibility for themselves and rebuild their community as we have done here in Southeast Queens, Jamaica, so that mine is not to cast blame nor to have my people dare to believe that they have been victimized, but rather, even if they have been, then it is time for them to take responsibility to reverse the process and shape new paradigms, which gives them the strength to be able to stand up in this democracy and give vent to that which represents the essence of who they really are, as opposed to other people's definitions of them.
Do you think that you have had to speak differently over the years than you might otherwise have had to because you were a politician, because you represented?
No, I've been a politician only 11 years of my 33 years here at Allen Church and my 45 years as a pastor.
Reverend Bernard, same question about how you reflect that anger to the extent that you find it in the congregation and to the extent that it's you know that you feel it's your job to reflect it.
Well, Reverend Flake and I are on the same page in that we believe that this is about empowering our people. You know, I had an interesting conversation at breakfast last year sometime with Bishop Desmond Tutu, and I asked him about the role of the church in South Africa post-apartheid. And one of the things that he indicated to me, he said very simply, he said, you know, during apartheid, the church knew what it was against. But after apartheid, the church became got into crisis because it didn't understand what it was for.
Huh.
So, you know, during the civil rights movement and prior to, the church was clear in terms of what it was against. But I think Reverend Flake and I represent today not so much what the church is against, but what the church is for. And that sometimes means dealing with certain issues that are antagonistic to our community. But the predominant issue for us is, again, letting our people know that they should be a part of the solution, not the problem. So it's about empowering them and giving them an understanding that things have changed in such a way that they can indeed experience upward mobility, self-reliance, self-empowerment, and become a strong part of American society.
Not to compare Reverend Wright with Martin Luther King, but we played that clip of Dr. King from 1967, not just coming out against the Vietnam War, but calling the United States government the biggest purveyor of violence in the world. I presume both of you are familiar with that clip.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in America may not know that he ever used that strong language. Do you want to reflect on that? Or...
Yeah, but remember, in that season and time, you had the issues that were not clearly restrictive to African-American communities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at what happened on the campus of South Carolina State, where the police came in and killed those kids, and within months, the same thing happened at Kent State. I think Martin was speaking out of a real active situation that had emerged in the time of his in which he lived. I think Pastor Bernard and I, if you look at these congregations, both of which are well over 20,000 members, they grow because we're not talking the language of America's violence against us. We're talking the language of how violent it is if our people merely sit by and consider and not consider the violence against themselves and what they need to do to improve not only themselves, improve their community, and thereby improve the nation of which they are a part, of which we will never be separated from.
We'll continue in a minute, and we'll take your phone calls for Reverend A.R. Bernard from the Christian Cultural Center in Brooklyn and Reverend Floyd Flake from the Allen AME Church in Queens, 212-433-WNYC, especially for church-going African-Americans. Do you hear the kind of language that Reverend Wright used? And what did you think of Barack Obama's speech? Our lines are full. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Reverend Flake and Reverend Bernard, and Paul in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Brian. I wanted to share a couple of things. One is that I want to pointedly say that I am black as opposed to African-American, the difference being that my people are from the Caribbean, my mom from Puerto Rico, my dad from the West Indies, and I was born and raised here. I'm in my late 40s, and I grew up black. The change to African-American didn't seem to embrace me, so that's the way I define myself.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the conversation this morning, which I find fascinating, one of the things that is crucial in my view is that the speech by Barack Obama in response to the words of Reverend Wright has seemed to become something of a Rorschach test for people, because people respond to it based on pre-existing notions. And I think that one of the wonderful things about Obama's speech has been the fact that race is now being discussed in a way in this country that has been exceedingly rare, at least in my lifetime, where there is a nuanced conversation where people are beginning to come to an understanding that there are real differences that need to get out onto the table. I attend a Lutheran church on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Advent Lutheran Church, which is primarily, it's very mixed, but the pastors are white. But I've heard liberation theology coming from the pulpit there, and a very clear desire for people to confront the shortcomings, not just embrace the strength of this country. This is a wonderful country. However, there are many areas where there is a need for people to be honest and open in their discussion about what is wrong so that they can be righted. And that is one of the things that I think is special. And that goes from anything to the socioeconomic situation to the war in Iraq.
Paul, thank you very much. Renee in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Renee.
Okay. I love your show.
Thank you.
You're one of my favorite journalists. I just want to say that.
Thanks.
You always ask the best questions.
It means a lot to me. Thanks a lot.
All right. I'm African American, and the comment I had to say, I'm really shocked more than anything at the reaction of white folk in general that this is new to them, number one. I'm also a little demoralized by this acquiescence or this kowtowing that's done by the African Americans everywhere throughout the media to kind of, you know, abate the fears of white folk. And I really want the country to consider the history, number one. Number two, please don't delegitimize our pain, which has been done for, you know, it's only been 146 years since the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, you know, and number three, we do have a tendency as a community to keep these things to ourselves because we've learned over time that when you talk about these things with white folk, they get scared. And we have developed a defense mechanism in order to keep ourselves and our children and our community safe to try to make them feel safe. I don't understand what it is that white folk are afraid of when it comes to having this conversation. We're not going to uprise. There will not be a rebellion. Now, you know, get over it. It's not going to happen.
So,
I might interject. It's more than that. Here's the real problem. I'm 63 years old, grew up in the segregated South, a victim of the racial segregation discrimination of that era. The colored bathrooms, the colored fountains, and all of that stuff. At 63, I'm still alive. The average 63-year-old white male, particularly a white person, is looking at me, and I am the person that they committed the acts against. They expect me to be angry, and they want a society that they want to call the post-racial society. It cannot be the post-racial society as long as you were my oppressor when I was growing up, and now I'm your equal, but you cannot deal with me as your equal. So you want to have a post-racial society where you don't discuss race because it presents a picture to you of who you were in the past, as opposed, and as you look at me, you can't understand how I got to the place where I am. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to discuss that there's a racial problem.
But also there has to be taken into consideration the privilege, which, you know, I hate to be stereotypically American and say my five white friends, very good friends, and the reason why they're my friends is because they understand the undeserved privilege that they've been lucky enough to have as a resource throughout their life compared to my lack thereof. So,
Renee, in terms of judging a political candidate, some people are saying, well, would you be as comfortable putting the shoe on the other foot and looking at some of these people who've endorsed John McCain and who he has praised, Reverend Hagee and Reverend Parsley, who say things like, Islam is a religion based on deception, or say Planned Parenthood is like the Nazi genocide. And are you as easily willing to look at that and say, well, John McCain is not those people. John McCain is John McCain. They're just people he knows.
John McCain, honestly, if you look at him, just politically and his strategy, and if you want to judge him based on the, you know, Republican tactics of judging, you know, political candidates across the board, he's a flip-flopper. He called Jerry Falwell an agent of intolerance, and now he's soliciting him for that right-wing, you know, religious support, right-wing support.
Jerry Falwell's dead, but he did take it back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what I think what everybody need to realize here, and I want all the black folks to let them hear my testimony. I was waiting for Barack Obama's response. I mean, I was sitting on my hands, and as a black woman, I was just so afraid he was going to disown this man. I was just so, like, if he would have done that, he would have really lost the black vote. He really galvanized us now. Now we know he knows where we're coming from, and he has the tools, you know, to be ready on day one. I mean,
Renee, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, I just want to say this, that it is important that Obama maintain himself not as the black candidate, but an American candidate. Mm-hmm. And I think that on the issue of the words spoken by Jeremiah Wright, Obama, by giving that speech, he took on the prophetic role in addressing the issue of race. There's an interesting passage in the Old Testament, the prophet Jeremiah, and it says, you cannot heal a thing by saying it's not there. And America has wanted to continue to say it's not there. But Obama, in his speech, took the bull by the horns, and I have to applaud him on that.
Let me get one more caller in here. Kimberly in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kimberly.
Good morning. Good to talk to you. My situation is I've lived internationally and nationally, and I grew up in the Midwest, but I now live in the South, in Memphis. And I think it's quite interesting that it's hard for us to kind of encapsulate and to share as African Americans the complexity of what it is to live in the country. And I think that Barack Obama, in this country in particular, because other countries deal with race slightly differently, I think Barack Obama just did an excellent job of being able to put it out there honestly.
What about your experience as a churchgoer, which I understand you are?
Yes, as a churchgoer, because what ends up happening is that you know you're here, and this is home for the most part, and my experience as an African-American woman growing up in an African-American church is that depending upon the issue, the African-American, I would say the preaching pedagogy was one of, it could be liberation theology, it could be to get us up and move, to empower us, and sometimes it was just a declaration of what is. And I think depending upon where you went, that's what you received. And depending upon the Sunday and what may have been happening in the community, the way it was given varied.
Let me ask you one thing then. With our guests, Reverend Bernard and Reverend Flake, saying they preach in a different way, trying to empower the individual kind of way, although from what I understand, Reverend Wright does a lot of that too. But if you were to hear things like, the government is spreading drugs in the community, the government is working to develop the AIDS virus, would you feel disempowered by that as an individual?
Well, it's quite interesting because I was actually living in Chicago and attending his church, and on at least one occasion I was there for the September 11th sermon.
Uh-huh.
I just moved back to Chicago, and I was there during that time. And no, I wouldn't. And I think it's quite interesting, actually, to challenge the whole question. Would you, for example, ask if this was a white pastor, would you have framed the question, is that something that you expect to hear in every white congregation on a Sunday morning? So I think it's even the whole subtlety of racism is that sometimes we group people in ways that aren't necessarily what we would do for the entire population.
Right. Yes, I hope that I would ask the question. So if it was, let's say, a minister from a particular denomination or whatever and then have somebody come out from his congregation and say, well, this is the kind of thing that happened in that generation, or this is the kind of thing that people hear all over the country, as I think Obama was basically saying, I think the question would be appropriate.
But I guess my point is that had it been a Caucasian preacher, would the question have been to all Caucasians, is that something you hear in your church on a Caucasian Sunday morning?
Right, I understand. But
that's what
I understand.
Was.
I understand your question about that.
I think you're dealing with two very honorable men, and I appreciate the fact that you even extended the conversation.
Okay.
There it is.
Thank you very much. And we're just about out of time, but I'm just curious if either of you, Reverend Bernard or Reverend Flake, have preached about this whole controversy from the pulpit directly, and whether you plan to this weekend or whether Easter is not the time for that. Reverend Bernard?
Yes, I have. I've continually spoken from the pulpit, but not with the kind of words that Jeremiah Wright has used on issues in our own city, the Sean Bell shooting, the march. I was there. I was part of that. And, so it's our responsibility, and it's expected by our congregations to make some kind of comment onto the issue.
Right. I guess I mean the particular Reverend Wright controversy.
I will be making statements this Sunday, even though it's Easter Sunday and we have our production and a lot of visitors. I have determined to take a small segment of that time to express some thoughts on this whole issue.
Can you give us a 30-second preview?
Well, number one, as I said before, Obama took on the prophetic role in addressing the issue of race. In the Bible, it says, the prophet Jeremiah, that you cannot heal a thing by saying it's not there. So he put it on the table. It is a time for America to grow up. And 232 years have passed since the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and America is still struggling to mature. And maturity doesn't come with age. It begins with the acceptance of responsibility. So when she is willing to accept responsibility for history that has perpetuated this type of injustices against people of color, that's when she will mature and begin to experience change.
Reverend Flake, same question.
Well, I think just as I said in my op-ed piece in the Daily News the other day, I would probably speak on it in the context of the Easter sermon in terms of Jesus gave his life as a sacrifice for those who had no voice. And from my perspective, the 30-second soundbite does not speak to the whole of what Jeremiah's message may have been. But our message must be one that helps people to fully understand that as great as America is and as much as we embrace our democracy, we can only make it stronger when we come to the realization of what its problems are. So mine would be a relatively simple part of a complete sermon, which I think would make more sense than the snippets of 30 seconds, which really don't give a sense of completeness.
I know. You're just not done yet. I know people in the preacher business. You'll be up Saturday night writing your Sunday morning sermon.
No, my sermon is done.
Paul, let me say this is important because one of the questions that comes up in all of this is, can I speak critically of my nation and that be deemed as me not loving that nation? And I don't think that's true. I think if we have a passion and love for our country, we are willing to speak critically at times, maybe not in the same language that Jeremiah Wright used.
Reverend Floyd Flake, senior pastor of the Allen African Methodist Episcopal Church in Queens. Reverend A.R. Bernard, founder and CEO of the Christian Cultural Center in Brooklyn. Happy Easter to both of you, and thank you very much for spending so much time with us today.
Thank you, and God
thank
bless.
You, Paul. God bless.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up in a minute, it's more of Follow Up Friday. This time we'll follow up on a call we got last week about a drug that some people are using for diseases other than it was approved for. Turns out people do that with lots of medications. We'll ask, when is it a good idea? Stay with us.